France officially ends its Operation Barkhane military mission in Africa's Sahel region. Its soldiers fought armed groups in that area for 9 years. What's it achieved? And what options are left now for maintaining regional security? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, France is officially ending its largest overseas military mission. Operation Barkhane was launched nearly 9 years ago in the Sahel region in Africa. Its aim was to maintain regional security and to combat armed groups linked to ISIL and Al-Qaeda. At its height, about 5,500 French soldiers operated alongside local armies in Mauritania, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger and Chad. But the mission was criticised for failing to produce results and became very unpopular. Attacks increased in Burkina Faso and Chad, and French and European forces were pulled out of Mali earlier this year when diplomatic relations soured after military coups in 2020 and 2021. France's president announced the end of the operation while launching a national strategic review of the military's aims for the next decade. Emmanuel Macron says around 3,000 French soldiers will remain in the Sahel, but in a different capacity.
Our interventions must be better defined from the beginning. We do not intend to remain committed to external operations indefinitely. It's also for this reason that I decided, in consultation with our partners, to formally announce the end of Operation Barkhane today. Our military support to the African nations of the region will continue, but according to the new principles that we have defined with them.
Well, let's take a closer look at how all of this developed. In 2012, Tuareg separatists took over large parts of northern Mali. Al-Qaeda and ISIL-linked fighters also entered that region. Then in January the following year, France launched Operation Serval at the request of Mali's government, sending troops to try to get rid of those groups. Now, despite this, the armed groups remained active. In 2014, Serval was succeeded by Operation Barkhane. Its aim was to provide broader support to the G5 Sahel member states. And then in 2020, the French-led Takuba Task Force of EU Special Forces was launched. That joint unit was meant to eventually replace Operation Barkhane. It, though, suspended its operations earlier this year. Well, let's now bring in our guests. From Dakar, we have Jean-Hervé Jezekel. He is the Sahel Project Director at International Crisis Group. From Paris, Niagale Bagayoko. She's the chair of the African Security Sector Network. And from Lagos, Nigeria, Chukwuemeka Eze, he's the executive director of the West African Network for Peacebuilding. A warm welcome to you all, and thank you for joining us on Inside Story today. Jean-Hervé, I'll start with you. I want to understand what the end of Operation Barkhane actually means in practical terms, because we know that these 3,000 troops will remain on the ground. So is this really just a shift in terms of engagement here?
Well, it actually means the end of a regional strategy to stabilize the Central Sahel region, meaning mostly Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. You know, in the last decade, France has been leading, you know, a broad regional, international supported strategy to stabilize the region. And Barkhane was really at the center of this effort. With the French troops withdrawing from Mali, the central component of this regional stabilization, then the regional stabilization strategy doesn't make sense anymore. So what ended yesterday, officially at least, is this regional attempt that has been deployed in the region for the last decade. What remained on the ground is still a lot of soldiers, a lot of course, French soldiers, but also in Mali itself, for instance, still a small force of European soldiers, especially at EUTM, an EU-led training mission, and also the MINUSMA, the UN Stabilization Force. So it's an important decision, but still in a region where you have thousands and thousands of foreign troops involved and trying to contain the expansion of violence.
Niagale, I'm curious how much you believe, as you're sitting in Paris, this is driven by domestic French considerations. I know there were French deaths as part of the mission, some 55 deaths, and this is obviously part of a broader strategic military review. Macron has tried to couch this as more of a pivot back to Europe, especially within the context of the war in Ukraine. Does it go beyond that?
No, in my view, it has no direct link with the internal political situation in France, where, you know, public opinion generally has not lots of interest in international policy, foreign affairs, and military interventions. I don't think neither that it has any links with the current engagement of France in Ukraine. Even if it's true that today France has decided to review its strategic position with a growing involvement in so-called conventional conflict. But no, in my view, this retreat and this end, formal end of Operation Barkhane, is linked to the very limited success and, more importantly, to the rejection and to the resentment which has been growing increasingly among public opinions in Sahel and more generally West African countries.
Well, Chukwuemeka, let me ask you then, in the region, is this being regarded as a kind of tacit acknowledgement of the failures here?
Well, I think it depends on who is providing the response. Perhaps if you ask the French government, they might think they have made an impact within the period that their presence has been felt in Mali. But others would argue seriously that this is a failure, because if you came with intention to stabilize Mali and by extension the entire Sahel region, then the question would be, how much of the stabilization have taken place, and especially happening at a time that the resentment against the French government in Mali and in most other states in the Sahel is increasing. You know, but I think also that it's important that we put all these bits and pieces together, which of course includes the fact that the French government might have taken that decision, first of all, based on current Russia-Ukraine war, on the basis of the role of the Russia, and how Russia is also now becoming the new friend of the Malians and even the government of Burkina Faso. So all this is important. So in taking that decision that has been taken by the French government, I am sure that such considerations were made. And again, the economic interests between the two countries have reduced drastically. And a lot of people are aware that some of the political economy of this crisis is also something to do with the benefits either from French government to Mali, or even from Mali to the French government.
Well, as Niagale was saying there, we have seen this very dramatic escalation of anti-French public sentiment. I want to listen to some of the reaction we heard in Niger after Macron's announcement. Let's take a listen.
We have said in black and white that we do not need the presence of the French Barkhane force in Niger, because it's a force that's at the root of terrorism in Sahel. It's at the root of the problem. It cannot be a solution and responsible for the problem.
Having a new name, a new operation in the Sahel, it doesn't change anything. For us, it's still the same soldiers who are there. Until now, we have not had convincing results.
When they left northern Mali, a part of these Barkhane elements came to Niger, since Niger requested their support. Since then, some of these elements have been working together with local armed forces, and they're doing a remarkable job on the ground.
So we have some mixed reaction there. Jean Hervé, do you feel that this is reflective of public sentiment on the ground, and why was so little achieved?
I mean, yes, it is definitely reflecting what is going on the ground. There is a strong anti-French government feeling that has developed. It's not new. It has developed in the last few years. It has deteriorated recently, as this sentiment has interfered with political turmoil. In Niger, but also in Bamako and in Ouagadougou. Why, you know, French were not able to achieve more. I think that it really is a complicated story, but I think to put it in a nutshell, I think that they invested too much in a military answer, and they were not able to two things. You know, first of all, they were not able to really include other partners as equal partners. You know, and I think that a Sahelian state never, you know, felt themselves as equal partners in defining all the objectives to stabilize the region. And second, I think that France, but also all the other actors involved in trying to stabilize, you know, the whole region, never managed to have a well-balanced strategy. And by well-balanced, I mean that military answers, military operation, counterterrorism always came first and predominated over all other objectives. And what the French failed, but they were not the only one to fail in that regard, you know, that they failed to kind of come with a more political ambition for the region. And I think that they always, you know, failed to subordinate, you know, military operation to this broader political ambition. And by political ambition, what we mean sometimes is also the opening of political dialogues with insurgents, and sometimes also with Chadian insurgents.
Of course, there are lots of different complex drivers in that region. But let me bring in Chukwuemeka here, because I understand your organization is part of a civil society coalition that's really been calling for more coherent grassroots action and has also been very critical of prioritizing a military solution. So let me ask you, what would you like to see done differently now?
I think the first thing to do is to take a pause. With all the military investments, all the investment that have been made in not just Mali, but in the entire Sahel region, what kind of results do we have? Is it not time to begin to invest in skills and the entrepreneurial skills of the citizens with the aim that we are dealing with human security, not just hardcore security? Because this is what has happened over the years. It has weakened the internal military. It has weakened the regional influence, the ECOWAS influence in the region. It has weakened the African Union influence in the region, and it has further weakened the coping mechanisms of the citizens. So why make such huge investment only just focusing on hardcore security, when there are fundamental issues, when there are structural issues that need to be addressed, which is investing in the human beings, in the citizens of the state? A lot of people feel that the economy of the Sahel region is now dependent on foreign aid, and people are no longer even confident in themselves to do anything. So we want to see a situation where there should be more of dialogue, more of soft approach, security approach to this, more of dialogue, more of investment in the human capital, so that people can have skills that can now remove them from crime and begin to focus on livelihoods.
Okay, let me bring in Niagale here, because as we've been saying, lots of different issues at play. This isn't just about religion or politics or resources. Can you break it down for us? What's driving recruitment in particular for some of these groups?
There are different kind of factors, but what is very important is to realize the fact that even if initially those jihadi groups were coming from abroad, especially from Algeria, they have changed and they have been much and more rooted in a local environment. Now, the most important movement, be they affiliated to Al-Qaeda or to the Islamic State, are headed or compound of local combatants. And they do have lots of strong linkages with local communities and local networks. It is also important to look at their transnational ability to shift from an area to another one. Of course, you can find a number of economic reasons. Sahel region is one of the poorest in the world, but you also do have ideological matter of adherence. What is important is not to consider all those groups only as a violent extremist. It is also important to look and to take into consideration their political agenda, because they are also definitely political actors, even if it is much more easy to identify political claims from Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups rather than to those which are affiliated to the Islamic States.
Well, speaking of political agendas, just taking a step back, it does seem that the Kremlin, for instance, is very eager to step into the space that's been left by the French. We certainly saw that, obviously, in Mali after the French pulled out. Jean Hervé, can I ask you, what kind of a difference has that made?
To be honest, you know, when the French retreated from Mali, some officers from France, you know, and others were thinking that their country will quickly collapse. This did not happen. I think that the Malian army, with also the support of Russian, probably Russian mercenaries, you know, were able to maintain some form of presence and even to organize a wave of new offensives in the beginning of the year. This being said, you know, the situation remains extremely difficult for Malian authorities. I'm not arguing that, you know, the situation is getting better because of the presence of Russian assistance in Mali. I'm simply stressing the fact that the withdrawing of the French did not lead to the collapse that some expected. So the situation is still extremely worrying. And something also that is interesting is that there is also a form of continuity, you know, between the time of the French, if you want, and the time of the Russian. In both cases, the government of Mali is heavily invested in a military answer to the insurgency. And that's not going to help. If you, I don't believe that the Russian will succeed where the French have failed. In a way, there is no real military answer, or not, you know, a predominantly military answer to this crisis.
Well, we did see Russian flags, I recall, being waved around during the coup in Burkina Faso, not only by protesters, but also by soldiers. And then in N'Djamena, we also saw some protesters waving Russian flags just a few months ago. There's been speculation about misinformation campaigns by Moscow. Chukwuemeka, I'm curious, do you feel that for people on the ground, particularly in rural communities, are the Russians viewed differently from the French? I mean, ultimately, this is, as Jean Hervé was alluding to there, this is still just men with guns.
I think it's a precarious situation. You remember the old cliche about the devil I know is better than the angel I don't know. You know, so it's a precarious situation. If you go to some of these states in the Sahel, the question they are asking, including their citizens, is this relationship with the French, what has it fetched us, you know? To the extent that post-colonial period, our currency, our economy is still determined by what takes place in Paris. So they are asking those questions, and they are genuine questions, to be very honest. However, we do not even know the details of the new friendship being cultivated with Russia. So that is even a major problem. And the more these external factors continue to influence the peace and security architecture in not just the Sahel region, but also in the West African region, the more and more the security, the internal coping mechanisms and resilience of the citizens and the states in the Sahel region will continue to be lacking in confidence and the ability to stand on its own. So now you are asking a critical question. So what happens post the French government presence? What happens? The Malian army, for example, does not have the wherewithal to now step in, because there is no investment, deliberate investment in them to step in post this intervention. So that's a huge problem.
Well, we do now have the military in charge in both Mali and Burkina Faso. I'm wondering how much French military failures here actually contributed to regime change or the sentiment for that to actually take place. And Niagale, do you think that it did? And could we potentially see more in Chad and Niger, for instance?
I think here it is very important to make a difference between the different countries. For sure, what happened in Chad after the death of Maréchal Idriss Déby Itno has been with the French position, which immediately recognized the military committee headed by the son of the late leader, has been a factor which has contributed to institutionalize and legitimize a military power in Chad. In Mali, that's completely different. I think that the problem in that France has completely overlooked governance problems, both in Burkina Faso and in Mali. In fact, the focus, my colleagues have stressed on only the military approach to the Malian or Burkinabe crisis, has prevented France to look at the big problems in terms of governments, of governance, and the way in which elected leaders, Ibeka in Mali or Kabore in Burkina Faso, have been growingly rejected by their own public opinion. And in fact, it is that is the reason why they have been overthrown by a military junta. And their friends, especially in Mali, have been trying to have the Malian military in power to be ousted themselves and to be replaced by new elected leaders. But it did not happen because it's very difficult to have such a double standard policies with such a position in Chad and another one in Mali and in a lesser extent in Burkina Faso.
Well, let's take a look now, though, at what's next. I know there's a huge amount of uncertainty, as we've all alluded to, but there are, as you said earlier, Jean Hervé, there are a number of soldiers on the ground, something like, 14,000 UN peacekeepers still there. We have the G5 forces from Niger, Burkina, Mauritania, Chad. Mali's pulled out, so I'm not convinced of how successful the G5 forces are going forward. I'm curious about your thoughts. But we have heard from Josep Borrell, the EU foreign policy chief. He says the terror threat is expanding and he's calling for a collective response, which all three of you seem to be calling for. So is there, do you think, Jean-Hervé, the space for political dialogue here? Is there the political will for peace talks, perhaps?
Well, it really depends on you know, the different countries. Right now, like I said previously, there is a strong continuity in Mali, you know, between the French, from the French to the Russian, in the sense that the strategy is still heavily military oriented. That's in a way that's unfortunate because I think that Mali 2 years ago was one of the first countries to publicly say that, you know, the government would be open to exploring dialogue as an option to solve the crisis. We are right now, I don't think that we're making much progress, you know, to this extent, in Mali at least. Then if you look at Niger, for instance, then you have a very different situation. There, the president of Niger, Mohamed Bazoum, has publicly said that he has engaged in talks with some of the jihadists, not necessarily the leaders of this movement, but not rank and file either, is looking at intermediary commanders and looking at ways to reintegrate some of these commanders into Niger. So I think that we have different situations right now in terms of political dialogues. And I'm a bit pessimistic about this option in Mali right now, but we have it's more advanced probably in Niger.
And of course, as this continues, civilians continue to pay the price for the ongoing conflict. Thank you, though, for joining our discussion today. Thank you to all of our guests, Jean-Hervé Jezekel, Niagale Bagayoko, and Chukwuemeka Eze. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Remember, you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Nastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.